Hi, welcome to the Our Growth.me summary of Extreme Ownership by Jocko Willink and Leif Babin. This book is about leadership and discipline based on the author's true life experiences as U.S. Navy SEALs. The core concept here is that a true leader must take full responsibility for both the successes and failures of their team or organization. Taking a look at the online reviews for this book, on Amazon it has 4.8 stars, and on Goodreads it has 4.3 stars. Lots of positive reviews praise the engaging military stories, say this book has applicable leadership principles, and overall that it's motivational. But there are some critical reviews who say the principles can be repetitive and that the book heavily relies on anecdotes. So, what does it take to be a leader in the U.S. Navy SEALs? Imagine that, making decisions where every choice could be a matter of life or death. Well, that's the daily reality for the most elite military teams in the world, like the Navy SEALs. And that means extreme ownership. This is not your average leadership book that you might pick up off the business shelf. You're getting a masterclass in leadership and discipline from the best of the best. Think of it as a playbook for how to lead in high-stakes situations, whether in a boardroom or on a battlefield. So who are Jocko and Leif? They're both retired U.S. Navy SEALs with a combined 33 years of military experience. They served in the Iraq War as part of the highly decorated SEAL Team 3, and later on they co-founded Echelon Front, which is their leadership consulting firm. So let's jump right into lesson number one, which is take extreme ownership. Leadership is embracing full responsibility for everything that happens and blaming no one else. So many people may believe that leadership is about maybe sounding confident and authoritative or never showing weakness, but what if that was actually the very opposite of effective leadership? Well, that's exactly what the idea that this book proposes. Jocko Willink and Leif Babin say that powerful leadership is actually all about taking more responsibility for other people. It's also about admitting your mistakes publicly and embracing extreme humility. In other words, it takes putting the well-being of others before our own egos. So, isn't that a refreshing take on leadership? So, let's put this very clearly and simply. What is extreme ownership in this book? Extreme ownership is the practice of you, the leader, taking full responsibility for everything in your domain, including all of your team's actions, outcomes, mistakes, and failures. So that means, according to these authors, Jocko and Leif, a true leader does these three things. Number one, they embrace accountability. When something goes wrong, they don't point fingers, but proactively take the blame, and then investigate what happened so they can prevent similar situations from happening in the future. They acknowledge mistakes and seek constructive criticism so that they can develop an improved plan to win in the future. This approach will not only earn you the respect of your team, but it also builds a culture of high standards and continuous improvement. In the best-selling book, The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People, the leadership author and expert Stephen Covey echoes this exact same point when he says, quote, "Until a person can say deeply and honestly, I am what I am today because of the choices I made yesterday, that person cannot say I choose otherwise," end quote. Can learn more about that in our summary of his book, The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People, on growth.me. The second thing a true leader does, according to extreme ownership, is they set a positive example. A leader's attitude is infectious. So by embodying extreme ownership, you're actually setting a new standard for others to emulate, and you create an environment where everyone strives to recognize and learn from their mistakes. So the word extreme in this book title is not about placing unreasonable demands on other people. It's about you as the leader embracing responsibility beyond what may seem reasonable to most people. So that's how we can inspire higher performance and standards in our team members. And the third thing a true leader does is guide underperforming team members. When a team member falls short, a true leader takes it upon themselves to train that person up to the right standard of performance. Or, if necessary, they make the tough decision to let them go, but that's only for the greater good of the team and mission. So imagine the difference between a manager approaching their employee with the attitude of, "Why did you make this mistake?" versus the attitude of extreme ownership, where they say, "It's my fault that I did not explain it well enough to you." By the manager putting aside their ego and taking the blame, it avoids provoking defensiveness in the other person, allowing them to see the problem clearly and to correct their future actions. So that's how they would guide underperforming team members. So let's finish up with a couple of examples. First, an example from the Navy SEALs. It was during the Iraq War after 9/11 happened, in the dust and heat of the city of Ramadi in Iraq, the Navy SEAL commander Jocko Willing faced a nightmare situation. His team had mistakenly fired on a building that contained U.S. soldiers, and tragically, the lives of soldiers were lost in the friendly fire incident, which is the worst situation that can happen in combat. In the aftermath, Jocko Willing's career hung in the balance. But Jocko responded decisively with extreme ownership. He took full responsibility for the situation by avoiding making excuses or blaming anyone else for what happened, even though the mistake had happened due to a whirlwind of factors. And then Jocko conducted a thorough review of the military's operating procedures so he could help ensure that the same error was not repeated in the future. And with those actions, Jocko not only regained the trust and respect of his superiors, but he also led his team members to embrace the same level of extreme accountability. And here's another example. This is from the business world that happened after Jocko and Leif exited the military and started doing consulting. So there was an executive at a manufacturing company who proposed a cost-cutting plan, which seemed foolproof on paper, but his measures soon faced strong resistance from both above him and below. The board of the company didn't provide the support that he needed to do it, and employees were also against a lot of the new plans for sales incentives. They thought it would hurt them. So after meeting with Jocko, this executive decided to stop pointing fingers at the board and at other people. He took full responsibility for the plan's failure. Then he shifted focus to how he could more effectively engage with the people in his company to make everyone on board with the plan. So how he shifted focus to communicating the benefits of it better to everyone. So to sum up this first lesson of the book, extreme ownership is about taking full responsibility for every aspect of your team's performance. When you lead by this example, everyone is better able to learn from mistakes and failures, leading to more sustained high performance. And I'm going to connect this principle to another book. Never criticize, condemn, or complain is one of the key principles in the book How to Win Friends and Influence People by Dale Carnegie. So the idea there is that even the worst people in the world will never condemn themselves for anything they've done. So by confronting someone directly with criticism or condemnation, all we really manage to do is offend them. And so we can all be far more influential and persuasive leaders by providing instead indirect criticism. For instance, instead of telling a team member, like, your report was late and incomplete, why did you do that? Instead, a leader can practice indirect criticism by saying, "I've noticed your recent reports have had some great insights. How do you think we can ensure they're submitted on time to maximize their impact?" So that kind of approach encourages the team member to reflect on their own actions, and then they can come up with situations, and that just fosters a more constructive and less confrontational atmosphere. So you can learn more tips for communication skills in our summary of the book, How to Win Friends and Influence People. So let's finish up here with a quiz question challenge. This is a fill in the blank. So see if you can guess this one. A true leader must blank by acknowledging mistakes and avoiding blaming others. So is it A, respond adaptively, B, engage team members, C, take full responsibility, or D, share credit? And the correct answer is C, take full responsibility. That's what a true leader must do, and they do that by acknowledging mistakes and avoiding blaming others. Now we're on to lesson number two, never tolerate low standards. The most important role for any leader is to be the role model and enforcer of high standards. Why do some teams excel while others falter? According to Extreme Ownership, the biggest factor is always the leader, not the team. Jocko and Leaf assert in this book that with the right leader, almost any team can transform its performance from bad to good. A leader's most crucial role is to be the living example of the standards that should be expected for the entire team. And it's not enough for them to simply state those expectations. You as a leader must embody and enforce them and not tolerate anything less. Why is it so important that you as the leader refuse to tolerate low standards? Because if a mistake goes unaddressed by you, then that lower standard of performance will become the new norm for everyone. And then in a short time, any team can slide down a path of mediocrity. Here's an example of this from the SEALs. So this is during Hell Week. This is an especially intense part of the famously difficult SEAL training. The trainees were split into 7-person teams called boat crews, and they had to carry these 200-pound rubber boats through obstacle courses on the beach in seemingly endless races. And during this particular Hell Week, there was one team that was consistently winning these races, and another team was consistently losing. And so the SEAL instructors decided to try out an idea. They swapped the team leaders of these two boat crews. And suddenly, the losing team was able to begin winning. And this really illustrates how the leader is the greatest factor in the performance of a team. But what happened to that team that used to be winning, and now they had the losing leader? Well, Jocko says these continued to perform well, and that was thanks to the high standards that had been set by that past good leader. So to sum up this lesson, the success of a team largely depends on the leader's commitment to high standards and their unwillingness to tolerate anything less. And I'll connect this to Steve Jobs, who was famous for his incredibly high, difficult standards. He once said this, quote, be a yardstick of quality. Some people aren't used to an environment where excellence is expected, end quote. So Steve Jobs' relentless pursuit of perfection made Apple a leader in innovation. But it also meant that working under Jobs was really demanding and intense. And a lot of people complained about working underneath him. For example, he insisted on switching to a glass screen for the first iPhone right before it launched. And that caused intense pressure on the engineering team. You can read more about his leadership style in our summary of the book Steve Jobs by Walter Isaacson on growth.me. And now here's another quiz question. In Extreme Ownership, a leader's standards are determined not by what they preach, but by what they blank. Is it A, prefer, B, tolerate, C, demand, or D, expect? And the correct answer is B, tolerate. So a leader's standards are determined not by what they preach, but by what they tolerate. And that brings us to lesson number three, discipline leads to freedom. Surprisingly, greater control and discipline in our lives pave the way for increased flexibility. Discipline is not the opposite of freedom, as most people believe. Discipline is actually the road that leads to freedom. This truth can be deeply counterintuitive to many people. The concept of discipline equals freedom is about how being more structured in our lives can open doors to greater flexibility and achievement. The most disciplined Navy SEALs clearly demonstrated this truth, says Jocko Willink. They were the ones who woke up early, followed strictly ordered schedules, and as a result, were able to accomplish more of what they wanted, even within the confines of their tightly scheduled days of SEAL training. Jocko himself exemplified this. Setting his alarm early was the only way he could carve out time for his personal goals, whether it was studying or cleaning. By following a controlled schedule, it allowed him to do more of what he wanted. And this principle also applies to teams. The more disciplined that each member can be in understanding the roles and duties, the standard operating procedures, and the mission objectives, then the easier it is that they can adjust the plan when it's needed and communicate the changes to everyone without the mission spiraling into chaos and confusion. And here's another example from the SEALs. So during SEAL operations in Iraq, when they were searching buildings for evidence, in the beginning, their approach for doing that didn't follow any specific process. They basically just ransacked the building. But this chaotic method was very imprecise, so they ended up searching some rooms twice, and others not at all. Finally, a more disciplined standard operating procedure was created for searching those buildings. Initially, a lot of the SEALs resisted this new procedure, believing that it sounded too complex. But Jocko was able to convince them that the old way was not working well, and so they should try it out. And after just a few practice runs, the SEALs were excited to find that it was only taking them 10 minutes to gather evidence from a building, compared to their previous average time of 45 minutes. So to sum up this lesson, discipline equals freedom, because as we practice more self-control, we also gain more flexibility to do what we really want. And teams that follow discipline procedures are better able to adjust flexibly when it's required. And I'm going to connect this to David Goggins, who you probably also know. David Goggins' early life was marked by poverty, prejudice, and physical abuse. As a young man battling obesity and lack of self-esteem, he transformed his life through sheer discipline. Goggins went from weighing over 300 pounds to becoming an ultra-marathon and an endurance athlete, even setting a world record for doing the most pull-ups in 24 hours. He also overcame his fear of water and a poor academic record to become a Navy SEAL. So in his book Can't Hurt Me, David Goggins describes the turning point in his life like this, quote, "From then on, I brainwashed myself into craving discomfort. If it was raining, I would go run. Whenever it started snowing, my mind would say, get your bleeping running shoes on. As a result, I became tougher, and being tough and resilient helped me meet my goals." End quote. Read more of his story in our summary of his book, Can't Hurt Me, by David Goggins. And let's finish up this one again with a quiz question. Disciplined Navy SEALs did more of what they wanted during their training with the specific habit of blank. Was it A, taking breaks, B, intense workouts, C, strict diets, or D, waking up early? And the correct answer is D, waking up early, was the habit that allowed Navy SEALs to do more of what they wanted even with their strict schedules. So next we have lesson number 4, be a true believer. To inspire and guide others effectively, you must first deeply believe in the mission yourself. To lead is not just to give people orders, it's about convincing and inspiring them to commit fully to the mission. And the best way to accomplish that is by first being a true believer in the mission yourself, say Jocko Willink and Leif Babin. Why? Because your words and actions will always reflect whether you have that authentic belief in the plan or whether you doubt it deep down. So here's how we can become a true believer. First, by asking lots of questions. To fully grasp the reasoning behind the plan, you must ask enough questions, even stupid-sounding questions, to your superiors. Keep asking until you're able to explain the reasoning for the mission convincingly to your own team. Next, adjust the plan if you need to, and if you have the authority to do so. You should be adapting the mission plan until it's something that you can really believe in and stand behind. And a true leader knows that even the best plans may need adjustments. And finally, explain why, not just what. To truly inspire your team with and convince them of it, it's essential to explain the reasoning behind the tasks of what they need to do. Don't just tell them what to do, share the why. This approach will help your team members see the bigger picture and understand their role in the mission. So it's often leaders' job to see that big picture and to communicate their role in it. And that will build a far deeper level of engagement and commitment, as they're not just following orders, they're contributing to a purpose they now understand and can also have faith in. Here's an example from the Navy SEALs. So in Iraq, the SEALs were told that they could only fight while alongside Iraqi soldiers. At first, Jocko Willink struggled with following that order because he worried that would disadvantage and endanger his SEALs. Because the Iraq Army soldiers were more poorly trained and ill-equipped compared to them. However, he held his doubts and sought to understand the reason for those orders. He wanted to understand the broader strategy from the perspective of his superiors. And that led Willing to realize that the ultimate goal in Iraq was not just to have immediate military successes, but the long-term win would be preparing the country's forces for long-term stability and self-defense. And that meant the Iraqi army needed real combat experience to be prepared to work on their own. And with that new understanding, Willink was able to embrace the order and explain the significance convincingly to his own troops. By shifting his perspective, he helped the SEALs see the value in working with the Iraqi soldiers. And it also led to unexpected benefits down the line, as the Iraqis' local knowledge helped their mission significantly. And here's a business example. So in one particular company, there were the executives who decided to implement a new sales incentive program. So basically, they cut most of the sales team's pay. And that made a lot of the managers very worried, but they were afraid to ask why. The CEO eventually found out about this, and she thought that she was approachable and didn't know the managers were confused. But when she found out, she was able to explain the reasoning for the plan. It was to save the company money, and although some people, salespeople would earn less, they would be able to keep the best salespeople, and they would reward the best salespeople more with this new program. And once the managers understood the reasoning for this plan, they could then get behind it. And they realized they should have asked about the plan much sooner. So let's sum up this lesson. Effectively leading and inspiring others means not just giving them orders and directions, but fully understanding and believing in the mission ourselves. I'm going to connect this to the business author Simon Sinek. He wrote, quote, "People don't buy what you do, they buy why you do it." End quote. So his core idea is that the best companies unite both employees and customers around a common mission, purpose, or why. Apple is a prime example of this. They were never just about building computers, that's what they did, but they always emphasized innovation and design excellence. That's why they did it. As a result, Apple have a customer base that became fiercely loyal to them, even across many product categories. So you can read more about that in our summary of his book, Start With Why by Simon Sinek on growth.me. So let's finish up with another quiz question. In order to fully understand the mission's plan, it is essential to A, trust superiors, B, wait for clarity, C, ask questions, or D, rely on intuition. And the answer is C, ask questions. It's essential to do that if you want to fully understand a mission or a plan. So that brings us to lesson number 5, ego aside, team first. Embracing humility helps us to acknowledge areas for our improvement because no individual is more important than the larger mission and team. Ego can be a major stumbling block in leadership and decision making. While ego drives many of us to be the best, it's also crucial to set it aside when necessary for the greater good of our team and mission, as no person is more important than the larger collective goal. Putting aside our ego allows us to acknowledge areas where we can improve rather than maintaining we are always right. It helps us to have clear judgment, to see things as they truly are, including where we may have contributed to setbacks and missteps. Accepting blame, even when the other person seems at fault, opens the door to constructive conversations and solutions. So let's begin with a SEAL example. This is again in the deadly war zone of Ramadi, Iraq. Over there, various US troops needed to work together, including the Army, Marines, and SEALs. Now, the SEALs often saw themselves as being above, following the usual grooming standards that other parts of the military had. But in that situation, Jocko had his own SEAL teams put aside their ego and follow the same strict standards in their grooming and uniforms so they could build a spirit of respect and camaraderie with the other soldiers on that base. But later on, they were joined by another elite group that did not try to blend in that same way. And eventually what happened is frictions arose between that other group and the other soldiers, and so they were sent away by the colonel. And here's another example, this one from the business world. Leif Babin received an urgent call from Gary, who was a middle manager at a drilling company that they're consulting for. The manager was dealing with a drilling chief who didn't follow the standard operating procedures for buying equipment, and that caused delays. Initially, he was very upset, but then Gary realized that the chief wasn't trying to be defiant, but simply lacked understanding of the reason behind the standard operating procedures. By speaking with Leif Babin, he was able to put his ego aside, and he decided to take extreme ownership of that person's mistake by seeing his own role in not explaining very clearly to the drilling chief the company's larger goals and the critical importance of following those standard operating procedures. So to sum up this lesson, putting aside ego is essential for effective leadership because that allows us to acknowledge personal faults and facilitates constructive discussions. And here's a quiz question. Extreme ownership says that accepting blame, even when we feel like we don't deserve it, leads to blank. Is it A, constructive conversations, B, heightened tensions, C, weakened authority, or D, diminished ego? And the correct answer is A, constructive conversations. When we accept blame and put aside our ego, that leads to constructive conversations where everybody can improve. And that brings us to the final lesson, number 6, the laws of combat. Effective teamwork is driven by strategies like cover and move, simple, prioritize and execute, and decentralized command. And we'll talk about all of these individually. Understanding these 4 laws of combat can be crucial for any team aiming for success. These 4 key strategies are not just military tactics, but they're powerful tools for fostering effective teamwork and achieving objectives in any environment. Let's begin with the first one, cover and move. Cover and move is a military strategy where one team provides cover while the other team moves forward. So it's really about different teams working together towards a common goal. And this same strategy can be applied to many businesses and organizations. So in other situations than the military, it's about finding ways to work together with teams that appear to be outside of your own. In companies, teams often work in departments or silos, and they can get caught up in their own problems and blame other teams for their setbacks. Instead, leaders within a company should step back to consider the bigger picture of their common mission. And here's a business example of this. At one company, the production manager was upset that he was being forced to work with a subsidiary company as a supplier, and that was causing problems and delays for his department. But after learning they shared the parent company and the same overall mission with that subsidiary, he decided to take extreme ownership. He helped that subsidiary company become more efficient and to get the resources they needed to do their job, and in turn, that helped his own department to get the supplies that they required. And so that's one way to apply cover and move, working with an outside team or a team that appears to be outside of your own to accomplish your own goals better. Next strategy is called simple. Keeping plans simple is very important. It can help you narrow your team's focus to the most critical objectives. It allows everyone to execute and communicate the strategy better, and it will help individual team members to execute the plan because they can adjust their actions on the ground better when needed when they clearly understand the core plan. So here are a couple examples. First, from the SEALs. During one operation in Ramadi, Jocko was able to convince his superiors to simplify this new patrol they were doing. He told them to begin with only covering a short distance within the city, and that would help them to get a handle on the dangers of the city, and then gradually they could expand the patrol. So beginning with a much simpler mission. And here's another example from the business world. There was a company that implemented a new bonus program at a manufacturing plant, but it was too complex. It confused employees about how they would be able to earn bonuses. And so the chief engineer and plant manager they had created this detailed system based on many, many factors, but it didn't work because it was too complicated. It didn't motivate employees because they didn't know how it worked. And so they simplified it. And employees finally could understand how to improve their performance to earn those bonuses. So that change in simplification led to better productivity, and it really benefited everyone at the end of the day. Now, the third strategy is called prioritize and execute. To avoid overwhelm, especially during high-pressure situations, we should identify our highest priorities and then execute them one at a time. You see, trying to address several issues at a time is usually inefficient and gets everyone confused. So begin with a single highest priority, get your team focused on that, and then when that is done, move on to the next one and then the next one. The SEALs have a saying here, relax, look around, make a call. Here's an example of this from the business world. A pharmaceutical company was losing money, so the CEO made a plan with several big steps, like introducing new products, expanding to new markets, and changing the website and sales team. But doing everything at once turned out to be too much. On Jocko Willink's advice, the CEO focused the resources of the company just on one major priority first, which was supporting the sales team. After a few months of doing that, revenues began to turn around and increase again, and so the company was able to then move on to their next biggest priorities. And there's a related concept here, which is called decisiveness amid uncertainty. Being a leader means making decisions even when you have incomplete information. But in most cases, it's better to make a decision quickly, even if your strategy is imperfect, than to remain frozen waiting for 100% certainty. You'll never have all the information. There are always going to be risks. Okay, and our final strategy for this lesson is called decentralized command. Decision-making should happen at lower levels, not just from the top, and that will increase any organization's adaptability and effectiveness. So, the big picture plan should be communicated to everyone, and then the reasoning should be explained behind why we're doing this, and then people should be given trust and flexibility in how they execute it. So one practical way to decentralize command in your organization is to keep team sizes smaller. Between 5 and 10 members is ideal for manageability, and this is a practice that even the SEALs follow. They divide any larger groups that they have into smaller units of 4 to 6 with one leader in them. In a business example, the regional president of a large company noticed there was an imbalance in their structure. There were some managers who would handle 22 people and others only had 2 people they were managing. So he decided to fix this, reorganizing so that each manager was responsible for between 4 to 6 people. And that created a much more balanced and manageable workload, created that decentralized command. Now, how do you communicate with your superiors? These authors recommend to do it proactively. And that's called leading up the chain of command. So you can lead upwards toward your superiors by communicating proactively with them. And that means making them aware of more information. You should tell them the information, like when you're facing an especially difficult challenge and what resources you need to complete your objectives or mission. So let's sum up this last section. So these four laws of combat originate from military tactics, are crucial for fostering collaboration, focusing on priorities, simplifying execution, and empowering decision-making at all levels in an organization. And here's a quiz question. What strategy emphasizes collaboration between different teams towards a common goal? Is it A, simple, B, decentralized command, C, prioritize and execute, or D, cover and move? And the correct answer here is D, cover and move. That strategy emphasizes collaborating with teams, even if they appear to be outside of your team or organization. Okay, now let's talk about just a handful of action steps for how we could apply this book to our lives today. First, set clear standards. Write down specific performance standards for yourself and your team and review them weekly. Second, establish routine. Create a daily schedule prioritizing key tasks, ensuring disciplined focus on important goals. Jocko especially recommends beginning to do this with waking up earlier. Third, define mission. Write a personal or team mission statement and review it weekly during planning sessions. Fourth, support teammates. Identify a team member's project each week and then offer tangible assistance or collaboration to them. Fifth, simplify communication. Break down complex instructions or plans into clear, simple steps before sharing them. And sixth, prioritize tasks. List all current tasks, then highlight the top three most urgent and important to tackle those first. Okay, I hope you found this motivational and helpful, and I'll see you in the next one.